Hello, welcome to the Mental Health Hour with me, John Manning from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. Very lucky here today to have Jess Dell with us. And if anyone isn't familiar with the Mental Health Hour, it's a safe space for us to talk about different issues related to mental health, but also looking at some practical steps that you can take. Not necessarily just to get yourself away from some of the topics that we talk about, but also if you are if you're supporting somebody else as well, how to do that in a in an effective way. So I'm John. I look after Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. So we're based in Milton Keynes, but we operate across the country for those who don't know. And we run a one-to-one and group mental health service, as well as training organisations and doing a lot of strategic work with companies so that they can support their staff in the right way. So a little bit of an update from us. It's been a bit of a whirlwind over the last 2 weeks where we've started to engage with GP surgeries directly to support the community of children and young people within particular areas and particular regions, which is really exciting. And we're also speaking to a lot of schools about providing our mentors into schools directly to support children and young people. So if there are any schools out there that want to have a chat with us, or any GP surgeries that want to have a chat with us, or if you're a parent and you think that the school that your children and young people go to could do with some extra provision or some extra support, then feel free to reach out to us. And we're very lucky today to have one of our mentors and trainers in with us to talk about a particular quite sensitive subject today. Welcome, Jess, to the show.
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah, all right.
Every time we speak, you're always in a different room, and it just seems like your house is never ending with different rooms and stuff. So welcome. And for people that might not have been familiar with the previous show that we did a show on protective factors about the different things that we can put in place that support our well-being. But for those who might not be familiar with you and the work that you do, who is Jess?
So, I am one of the one-to-one mentors with Arthur Ellis, and I'm doing some of the training. I've also done a undergraduate degree in psychology, and I'm currently doing a master's in clinical psychology, which is coming to an end next month.
Yes, it has. There's probably quite a few people who are either going to university at the moment, or parents of people who go to university. So how's it been the last, well, this year really, with uni? Because you go to Royal Holloway in London, so you're not travelling in or anything like that anymore. How's the adjustment been for you?
No, it's very strange. It's in some ways almost feels like I'm not actually doing it, because when you're not going in, you can kind of forget that it's going on. But it's just kind of been that adjustment from doing it from home, trying to keep yourself motivated because you can't go and shut yourself in the library for a day. So it's kind of that fight of saying, even though I'm not going in, I've got to carry on.
Yeah, I think we have that with loads of different places. I know that with me in the gym, for example, it's really difficult to get the motivation to work out if I'm not physically going somewhere. So it takes an awful lot of discipline, and you've been doing really well, and like you said, it's nearly over. I don't know if that's the right way to put it. I keep kind of willing it to finish, but yeah, you're nearly finished with your dissertation, which is going to be really, really good.
Fingers
And
crossed, yeah.
free up a lot of your time so you can support more people and all of that sort of stuff through us, which is going to be
Yeah,
great.
definitely.
So today we're going to have a talk about a relatively sensitive subject, which is all around self-harm, or self-injury, as it's also known. And it's a really important subject that I wanted to cover today, really, because there's been quite an increase in self-injury over the last few years. So from 2014 up to 2016, self-injury, and this was just in A&E, so it was only those that were reported in that way, but it was an increase of around 70% in young people. So it's quite concerning, obviously, and looking at why that is, why that could be happening, but then also putting some steps in place if you do recognise any of the signs and stuff that we're going to be going through. You know, what can you do to get involved as a parent and recognise these behaviours and support the children in the right way? So we wanted to cover it because obviously there's been a lot of disruption within schools. There's been a lot of disruption in day-to-day life, certainly for young people as well as adults. And going into school throughout summer holidays, we wanted to cover off some of the signs they might be able to pick up on, so that if you do relate to anything that is going to be covered in the show, then you can utilise summer as a really good way before getting back to a little bit more of normality, or maybe making that leap into a new school, to be able to process what's going on and put certain things in place as a preventative measure. So, Jess, you've covered off self-injury in your courses, and I know that you've dealt with it through us as well in your work. So what is self-harm, self-injury? I suppose they're kind of the same thing. But what would you say is a summary of self-harm or self-injury if it's a relatively new thing for people?
Yeah, they kind of vary a little bit. I'd say that when we often think of self-harm, most people kind of think of the thought of people that are actually cutting themselves, and that is a form of self-harm. But it can also be things such as someone burning or hitting themselves, anything they're doing to deliberately harm themselves. And then you can kind of move on to the other side of it, which is self-injury or self-injurious behaviour, which is when you're not necessarily doing those things such as the cutting yourself, but you're behaving in a way that could cause yourself some damage. So it's kind of that negative behaviour that you're putting yourself at potential risk. So things like poor eating habits, if you've got to a point where you're not wanting to take care of yourself, poor hygiene, That kind of behaviour that you're trying to do something that's not necessarily good.
And that can be really less, that can be a lot less obvious as well, you know, like, yeah. I think that for people over time, if it is self-injurious behaviour, it can be a lot more difficult to pick up on, because obviously self-harm is that that immediate, quite aggressive act. But self-injurious behaviour is a lot more subtle, and it's a lot more over time. So we'll have a look at some examples of those. We'll have a look at what sort of behaviours that might bring. But then also we're going to be talking about some solutions that either parents or individuals, or if you have a partner that might be self-harming or looking at self-injurious behaviour, we're going to have a look at the sort of steps that you can go to be able to support them. Obviously, within Arthur Ellis, we have people that can help with this. So at any point throughout listening to this, if you do want to reach out to us, you certainly can do, even if it's just to ask some questions or to have a chat with us. So we'll come back and talk more about self-injury, self-harm after this.
The MK Mental Health Hour with 123 Internet Group.
MKFM.
Welcome back to the Mental Health Hour with me, John Manning from Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. Very lucky to have Jess with us today, and we were talking about self-harm, self-injury, and we spoke about some stats at the beginning of the show that between 2014-2016, it's had quite a large increase. So there's been quite a large increase, around 70% of certainly young people that these particular stats were focused on in practicing self-harm as a way to deal with things. So Jess, why do you think that it's increasing? Why do you think it's increasing? What's kind of going on in your opinion?
I think there can be kind of a mixed opinion towards it. Because if you look at some kind of researchers that are looking into this, they've got the one side of saying that the reason that we're seeing an increase in things such as self-harm or depression and all that, all those kind of things, is actually because we're now talking about it more and things get reported more. So because we're recording it, the stats are going up. So that's why we're seeing an increase. But then I suppose there's the other kind of side of it where self-harm is normally kind of a response of quite strong, like emotional distress. We often live in an environment now, so for people that are going to work and coming home from work, or young people that are going to school, there's kind of a constant thing, especially with things like social media, that can be taken around kind of all of these places.
Yeah.
So if there's any, especially for young people, if there's any kind of stress that's being caused by that, and they're talking about at school, and then they're going home and it's carrying on at home, it's like there's no kind of cutoff from this stress that's causing us to feel this way. We're in this continuous circle with all this stuff that's going on. There's not really like an end to it.
Yeah, there's no let up from that. And I think it was at the end of 2019, we did a show all about stress and looking at what people can do if they do experience too much stress, because obviously a little bit is healthy, a little bit is good, it keeps you going. But stress is designed for us to use in those short bursts in order to help us. In humans, it releases this hormone cortisol, and it's to help us in situations if we are looking, you know, at a saber-toothed tiger, or we're being chased down by an elephant or something like that, which, yeah, you know, obviously I would be absolutely fine to be covered in stress at that point to help me out of that situation. But like you said, now that we're in a world that all of these things are very constant and there's not really a let up from it, it prolongs that period and that cortisol release. So that's where it can start having a longer term impact, and we're not necessarily trained or taught how to deal with those things.
No.
So I suppose the tools or coping strategies that come into that, is that where self-harm comes in, if they don't necessarily match the level of stress or the level of distress that we are experiencing?
I'd definitely say that's something that can impact it. Kind of the levels of stress that we can be having or someone's experiencing, if we don't know how to recognise this, cope with it, and kind of be able to work through it, process it, if we don't have those skills and those tools to be able to do that, then that stress isn't going anywhere. It's building up and it's not being processed. So then it's that kind of issue of someone's got all these emotions that have built up too much and they don't know how to get rid of it. So something like self-harm can kind of be that quick release to help them take that emotional thing, put it into something physical and get rid of it, even if it's just for a short amount of time.
Mm.
For them, that can seem like their only option.
Because as well, if it is, emotions are very difficult to recognize, to process. There's so many of them as well, and certainly if it's something that's new that you're experiencing, like a lot of, you know, young people, especially if they're going through puberty and that kind of phase in their life as well, there's so many new things that they're experiencing. And I guess if it is a very new a new emotion that you can't necessarily process or recognize or understand, then you will find other ways in which to process that and to have that release. And certainly from my own time looking into it, some reasons why people might do it is to turn that emotional distress into something that's physical. So it is, you know, you can see it, it's there. It almost makes it real, even though the emotional stuff is very real. It's more difficult to process. So if you're processing the pain from a cut, for example, it's much easier. It's a much more human thing that is more recognised as well, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely.
Is there any other? So we've said about cutting, burning at the beginning in relation to that self-harm. So those immediate, quite aggressive forms of it. Mm. Are there any other forms that are that kind of related to self-harm in particular?
Yeah, so we kind of went through a little bit early on the kind of extreme self-harm that you just said about with the cutting, burning, and that really kind of physical image of it. And then the other side of kind of self-injurious behaviour, that's when things are kind of more, I suppose it can kind of be more subtle in a way. So it's not like a physical thing that we can see on someone, and it can be kind of harder to spot that someone is behaving in a way that they're trying to damage themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still kind of coming from the same kind of roots. It's still trying to get rid of that distress that they're feeling. It's still a way to get out those emotions. Well, even if they're not physically cutting themselves, there can be the other things of not looking after yourself, general kind of self-care, and damaging behaviours like kind of drugs and alcohol and that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to ask you something that I get asked all the time. Is it attention seeking?
No. I would, even if that's just my opinion, I would definitely say it is not attention seeking. I think it's something that it's really sad that someone can get to the point of feeling so unable to cope with their emotions, and there's no other route for them to go than to cause themselves harm. Mm. And even if that person has got to the point that they feel like they can get some attention from it, that's terrible enough that someone should feel they have to go to that extent to get some attention.
Yeah.
But I would not say that it is a form of attention seeking at all, no.
I get asked it quite regularly, because I think that in some respects people think that certainly it's very extreme, isn't it? And I think that if people don't necessarily understand why people do it, and that emotion and what's going on behind the scenes for that person, even if that person, like you said, is seeking some sort of attention or for people to reach out to them and ask them if they need any help, there is still something very wrong with that. Do you know what I mean? So they still do need some form of help if they are doing it to as a form of reaching out and trying to get somebody to talk to them. So there is, I think in some respects there is an element of getting some attention, but it's in order to get help. It's always an interesting time when somebody asks us something like that, because it's also in relation to sort of further extremes like suicide and that sort of thing. If people have an attempt, are they just attention seeking? And it's like, well, you've got to look at what's behind the scenes there, what's actually happening for that person that's driving them to do that. Even if it is a way of reaching out, they're reaching out, it's still the same. So no, that's really good. And it's such a vast topic, and exploring, you know, that emotional distress and why that might come about, whether it's that immediate response and that quite aggressive response like self-harm, or that prolonged impact with self-injurious behavior and stuff, it's really, really interesting. So we'll come back and we'll talk about what sort of signs we might be able to pick up on. So looking at self-harm in the respect of cutting or more of that aggressive side, that might be relatively obvious to some people to be able to pick up on, but people, as I understand it, get very good at hiding these sorts of things.
Yeah.
So we'll come back and we'll talk about what you might be able to do to pick up on it if you do get a bit suspicious that somebody within your circle might be experiencing it. So we'll have a little bit of a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about some of the signs.
The MK Mental Health Hour with 123 Internet Group. MKFM.
Hello, welcome back to the Mental Health Hour with me, John Manning, from Arthritis Mental Health Support. We're also here with Jess Dell, who is one of our very own mentors, trainers, and psychology experts. So, Jess, we've been speaking today about self-harm, self-injury, the different types of it, why it happens. So looking at that emotional distress and that kind of that let up of all of that pent up emotion that people can experience. But we've kind of touched on some of the actions that people can take, or cutting, burning, or some of the self-injurious behaviours. But we have pointed out that sometimes things are very obvious to pick up on. You know, if it's a visible, aggressive thing, but also we've said that it can be quite subtle as well. So if there was somebody out there who wanted to pick up on the signs that someone might be either at risk or someone might be taking part in self-harm, what are those behaviours? Does it vary from self-harm to self-injury? What might people begin to pick up on?
I think it can vary, yeah. It's kind of being able to, if it's someone that you know, being able to pick up on these red flags that you can say that person's behaving differently. I think that's normally the most common thing is, so we can look out for the physical things. Like if we think that if there's a sign that someone's self-harming in the form of cutting themselves, maybe they're wearing longer sleeves or they're covering up more, or it's a really hot day and they're still completely covered, those kind of things. Yeah. That can be the kind of stuff that's be a little bit of a red flag. But when that then comes hand in hand with a change in behaviour, or if that kind of stuff is usual for someone, if they normally dress in that kind of way, they're more covered, the signs then to kind of look for is if they're behaving differently. So that can be things.
It's changes, is it? It's changes in behaviour.
Yeah.
Okay. What sort of changes might you pick up on?
So things like if someone's becoming particularly kind of withdrawn, if they're not getting as involved in social situations, or if they're not communicating the way they used to, or things like maybe if you do see them, they're becoming frustrated, or if the way they're speaking is out of sorts from how they normally would. So one of the kind of signs that we can say is if someone's showing signs of low self-esteem and talking a way that expresses kind of a lot of self-loathing.
So they're kind of putting themselves down quite a lot.
Yeah.
Internal. So it's their fault, it's different situations are coming back at them, or they're putting them back on themselves.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. So if you're having that kind of discussion and they're constantly taking it back to that, it, like you just said, it's their fault, or they're the one that's wrong, or they're unhappy with themselves or something they've done, or unhappy with the way they think, it's like they're constantly in the mindset of they are bad. That's a very big kind of red flag to see.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, if there is a, you said about a really, really good example offline about self-harm in particular, which was that very sort of immediate and aggressive response to emotional distress. So you said about an example within people who might have autism.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talk about, it's referred to as self-injurious behaviour in someone who has autism, if they've got to the point where they're feeling very distressed or they have emotions that they can't express. We can see episodes where they're showing this behaviour or trying to harm or damage themselves. It can be a situation like if you see an autistic child and they've got too distressed and then they've ended up hitting their head against the wall. That's the kind of stuff that is classed as self-injurious behaviour, especially in someone with autism.
Yeah, because I think that a lot of people might not necessarily see that as a form of self-harm or self-injury, because it is just, it's that frustration. But if that, I suppose there's a danger of that forming as a habit, you know, like that's the way that I deal with this particular situation. Certainly in young people, and I know that, you know, kids regularly, you know, hit walls or do particular things, and it's that's where the statistics for me might not necessarily be completely accurate, because I think if a child is hitting a wall, or even an adult is hitting a wall, it might not necessarily be seen as self-injurious behaviour or self-harm. It's just getting frustration out. But that would sort of be within the realm of self-injurious behaviour, you say?
Yeah, so I think it's quite important as well to touch on the fact that this, when we're saying things like emotional distress or feeling a lot of these strong emotions that are overwhelming, it doesn't necessarily mean overwhelmingly sad. It can be feelings of feeling extremely frustrated or extremely angry. It's just these emotions, whatever that emotion is, that has got too powerful. So then you're having, you've learned, it's like a learned response almost, that you've learned that hitting that wall or whatever your outburst is helping you get rid of that feeling, even if it's just for a short period of time. You've learned the response to kind of get into the habit of then when you feel that way, that's what you do to get rid of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking at the sort of more prolonged self-injurious behavior rather than kind of an outburst type of style, there's also, we mentioned about drugs and alcohol and that sort of thing. And obviously it can be binge, but it's typically quite a long-term involvement with drugs or a long-term involvement with alcohol. So would the signs for that change? So if somebody was beginning to take drugs, would that, as far as what we've spoken about, that would be consistent with self-injurious behaviour. You're causing harm to yourself by ingesting or taking these drugs. So would there be different signs that you would pick up on that, or would the same sort of signs be relevant in that respect?
They can definitely kind of carry over into that as well, especially the changes of behaviour that we spoke about. That's definitely something you'd see in someone that is taken to using drugs or excessive alcohol intake as their kind of form of self-harm. But I think especially kind of with alcohol, that can be a form of that feeling of needing to punish yourself in a way, and it can become something you are almost reliant on. So it's like you know, that's something that will either make you feel numb for a little while or just help you get through whatever that situation is. So you can see changes in behaviour of that, kind of the typical things that you'd see if someone is using those things anyway, those kind of signs of when someone's been drinking a lot.
And I suppose it ties in quite well with, certainly if that's been going on for quite a while, it ties into what we said about at the beginning about self-injurious behaviours also being just generally not looking after yourself. So, you know, if you were, I'm sure there's people out there who have been hungover. I know I have before. But you know, you don't really necessarily have a shower that day, or you might not look as hygienic or as well looked after as you typically would. So obviously if that's prolonged over a period of time, then, you know, you might be able to pick up on it in what people are wearing or what, you know, how they present themselves and that sort of thing. So it's those changes, I suppose, that we're saying that people can pick up on. It doesn't necessarily mean that people are self-harming or self-injurious, but it's certainly a good way to be able to highlight these changes in behaviour to them to see if they do need any additional help. One thing I found out recently is that response to drugs, or particular drugs, I was looking into, so be careful how I put this, I was looking into cocaine, and it was more learning about what happens in the brain and what happens, you know, why is it so addictive? Why do people, you know, rely on it? Because there was this really interesting documentary I watched on a rehab facility, and it you go into these YouTube holes, don't you, and you watch different things. And I ended up finding out that that first hit of dopamine, which is like the happy hormone, that first hit of dopamine that you get from a particular drug, the brain's ability to create that level of dopamine will then expand in order to suit it. So if you were to take a particular drug, you're going to get a really high release of dopamine, but then the brain will adjust to be able to withstand that dopamine amount. So the next time that you take it, it's not going to fill the space of the first hit of dopamine. So there'll always be an overflow. The brain will kind of create an overflow in order to withstand that hit. So that's why people get addicted, because the second time they have it, it's not going to fulfill them the same amount of time as before.
Yeah.
So they'll constantly be trying to get that first hit back, but the brain's adapted. The brain has changed in order to do that. And I suppose that's why it's so important for us to be able to recognize these things, do something about it so that it doesn't escalate to that degree. Because there's certain things, I suppose, that people need to do to get away from those behaviors and to change those behaviors. So if somebody does pick up on those signs, either in themselves or in someone else, what are the steps that they might need to take? What do we do about it? You know, we've picked up on somebody, maybe they've got some changes in behavior. Maybe we recognize some of these self-injurious behaviors in people. What do we do about it? How can we help someone?
So I think when you're seeing these kind of changes in behavior, or you're spotting these little red flags that are coming up, kind of the first thing that I think is quite good to do is just to let that person know that you have noticed that they are not behaving the way they normally are. It can be quite a powerful thing for someone to be aware that someone has recognized enough that they're not themselves, that something is going wrong. Just to, even as a reminder that someone cares that much to be able to notice.
Mm.
And then we can kind of go on to the steps of, if you think that someone is self-harming, the way to kind of go about asking that is to ask a straight yes or no question, because that can avoid getting into the and any ways that person might be avoiding it, or it can be quite a difficult discussion.
Yeah,
really.
But asking that direct question, you know, are you harming yourself? Is super important, because I suppose when it's got to that level and they're experiencing that amount of distress, they need to get some support pretty immediately, really.
Yeah.
So if somebody was to, you know, we sit down with someone, we say, right, I've noticed X, Y, and Z, you've not really been looking after yourself. I recognize you've been drinking more recently, or maybe you've been wearing really long sleeves. Have you been harming yourself? What happens if they say yes? What do we do?
So that again is kind of that's a situation that can be quite difficult. So if you've gone through the process of asking someone, are you self-harming, and they say yes, that person then really does need to be getting help. So in that situation, initially as well, you need to kind of be able to assess the situation. So do they need help immediately? So if they just self-harm then and there, you need to get them that help, calling 999 or taking them to A&E.
Yeah.
And then kind of the future steps from that, help them to get the support that they need. So go and see their doctor, seeing what mental health services might be around for them, making sure that after you've had that, are you self-harming yourself, yes or no, that they're not then just kind of left hanging there. You are doing something about it. They're getting the help that they need.
Yeah. Should people immediately stop self-harming? So we've said that it's kind of a learned behavior. It's something that is probably, certainly if you're picking up on the signs, it's probably something that in a way people kind of rely on as a way to process what's going on and process this emotional distress that they're experiencing. So is it wise for people just to stop self-harming straight away, like cold turkey?
Right. So it can sound kind of strange to say, but the thing that people are normally advised is to not stop cold turkey, because like you said, it is something that they've kind of become reliant on. It is technically, for them, it has become their coping strategy. Yeah. So if you're getting that person to then just stop, then they're doing it no more. Everything that they've been feeling and struggling with hasn't gone anywhere. So they've still got this distress that they're unable to cope with, and they now no longer have a release from it. So instead of getting them to stop straight away, that's why we kind of encourage people to be getting the help they need, is to give them the skills to be able to transfer what they have learned as their way of coping into something that is actually effective, and that you're dealing with the emotions and the distress. You're not just repressing them through self-harm.
Absolutely. And if it is, if it has developed into that kind of outlet, it needs to go somewhere, like you say. So if it is something that's really bottled up, it could even, if it is stop cold turkey, we're gonna take everything and completely childproof the house or whatever, then that could potentially lead to them having outlets in other areas, I can imagine. So rather than doing what they've, you know, come to terms with that works for the time being, it could change direction and potentially be even worse.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a risk of that kind of thing happening, especially if they've learned that that is their form of outlet, and then if you take that away from them, then like you say, there is a risk that they will just go and find something else that is similar or something else that is worse. Because if they haven't got the tools to know what the right way is, or the right kind of safe and effective way to be dealing with the ways that we're feeling.
Yeah.
And then we've taken away this form that is technically damaging, then they're not they might not be able to learn themselves if you just kind of leave them on their own and say you're not allowed to do that anymore. You don't know what else they can then turn to instead.
Yeah. And so what would the steps be? So we've sat down, we've highlighted the different changes that we've recognised, we've asked the direct question, and then if they've done it there and then or recently done it, then getting them the immediate support. If it's something that isn't sort of an immediate risk to themselves, then going to the GP, talking through the different options for mental health services.
Yeah.
So at home, what might need to change? Because I know that we've looked into some things previously where instead of stopping cold turkey, there's kind of alternatives. So it's about eking out the time or change and building up an idea of the triggers and what kicks all of this sort of stuff off. So what can people do individually, and what can people do at home if there is somebody that they're living with that is experiencing self-harming behaviours?
Yeah, so you just kind of touched on it a little bit there as well, the kind of being able to extend the amount of time in which you're doing it, in which you're feeling it. So if someone themselves is a self-harmer and they've got into that position where they're feeling like that's what they need then and there, all those emotions are built up and they need that release.
Yeah.
Of course, kind of trying to train yourself to wait that little bit longer and push yourself that little bit longer. So it's like you're training yourself that you don't actually need that, if that can kind of make sense.
So if you were to begin getting that urge, then instead of the typical response, which might be, right, I'm going to do this right away, maybe for the next 5 times that you feel that urge, giving yourself a target of, I'm going to wait 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And the next time, waiting 30 minutes and that sort of thing, and like retraining to be able to do it in a more controlled way, gaining control back of it, I suppose. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So if ultimately wanting to move away from self-harm as the way in which you cope with that distress, what other things might you be able to bring in? Because obviously, like we said, that emotional distress needs to go somewhere. Those emotions need to go somewhere. So do you redirect it? Because I suppose you can't just get rid of them. You know, you're still going to experience emotions. We want to experience emotions. They are, you know, they're very, very important. But what do you kind of do as an alternative once you've been able to spread that time and become less reliant on it? What do you do instead?
Yeah, so like you said, those emotions are still going to be there. It's not that just because you've managed to kind of extend the time in which you're doing it that they've just gone, they don't just turn off. So it's quite important, especially for the individuals that are doing this, to recognise what their personal triggers are for it. So if for them, if it's something that they're feeling a lot of emotional pain, being able to find another way that's an outlet for that feeling of pain. So that can be things like writing those feelings down, getting them out in a way that is not causing you harm. And that can also be quite difficult for people, because I think one of the things that can lead into self-harm is that people aren't able to process these emotions. It's not just that they're too much, they can't process them. So right. Self-harm is a way of not actually thinking about them in a way. So when we can kind of change that, if it's something to do with pain and writing these things down, you're allowing yourself to actually recognize the feelings that you're experiencing. And then once we've written them down and we can see what they are, we're beginning to process those emotions a little bit more.
Right.
Or if it's something different, so if your personal trigger is something like anger, finding another outlet for that anger. So exercise is a really good one, because it can release its endorphins as well. And it's a constructive way to be getting that really strong anger, frustration out.
Yeah.
And in a way that's not harming you, you're doing something that is still pushing it away, and you're still acknowledging that that is a feeling you're experiencing.
Yeah. So if we were, so if somebody was out there listening and they know that they have been self-harming, or they relate to some of the self-injurious behaviours, they get an urge. So usually they will just succumb to that urge immediately. So what we're saying is that if they can try their best to eke out that time until they succumb to it, but utilise that time in between maybe to do some exercise or to do a healthy distraction. So maybe writing about what they're experiencing before they succumb. And it could be that, you know, if they were able to utilise that time, it might not be for everybody, you know, straight away at least, but it could be that if you do get an urge and then you go for, I call them angry runs. So, when you're running and you're not there for fun. You just need to run off some frustration. It might be then that they get home and the urge is gone, and they don't necessarily need to, and they found another outlet for it. So identify what your trigger is. So it's might be anger, it might be frustration. And then I suppose, would it be a case then that people can ultimately get to a position where they are they're looking forward at certain situations that might cause those triggers, so they can put particular things in place? Is that kind of the goal of where to get to? So say I've got a really busy week, or there are exams coming up, or something that I know is going to cause stress or frustration or whatever this trigger is. You can then, I suppose, build in time for angry runs, or build in time for writing, you know, to counteract and prepare yourself for those things. Is that kind of the idea around what people need to really get to?
Yeah, I definitely think so. If you can kind of if you can understand what your triggers are, you're building your understanding of yourself, and you're building your understanding of your own emotional kind of literacy, intelligence, what it is that makes you feel these certain ways. And once you've built on that understanding, then yeah, you can you can effectively start putting things in place to kind of help you manage these things. And it's all that thing again of being able to recognize the feelings that you're experiencing and understanding that it is okay to be feeling these things. We just need to be able to prepare ourselves for the feelings that we're going to experience, or be able to know what it is that is going to cause us a lot of distress, so that then we can handle it effectively and we can process it effectively. It's not a shock as much as a shock to us, and it's not getting to that point of just being completely overwhelmed.
Yeah, and it really feels at that point when, you know, usually that the emotions are on top of you, but if you can flip that round and you know when those emotions might be coming and you know exactly what to do about it, then you're in control.
Definitely, yeah. Emotions are really powerful things as well, but they're also, I think they can become more powerful when we give them that power. So if we are able to take that away, and then we're the one who's in control, and we're able to see how each of these emotions can affect us, then we are, like you said, we are taking that control back. We are much better at kind of looking after, protecting ourselves, and knowing what we need to do to make sure that we are okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So there, we've gone through a lot today, and there's been it's been fantastic. Thank you, Jess. So looking at the different behaviours, so there's the immediate kind of outburst that we might see in those very aggressive immediate forms of self-harm, but then also we looked at the self-injurious behaviours, maybe involving drugs or alcohol, or those longer term changes in behaviour, like not looking after ourselves and maybe talking in a different way, like very self-loathing, or talking in a way that doesn't give us any worth. So if it is a case that it is those immediate outbursts and someone's recently done one, then we need to get them help straight away. We need to ask them directly if they are self-harming. If it is something that's longer term, or looking at more of those behaviours, then it's a case of encouraging them to get some support from the GP, looking at what the mental health services can provide in way of long-term solutions for these behaviours, or for this way that emotional stress is dealt with. And then individually, if there is anybody out there that is self-harming and you're listening, take a look at what are the triggers for your self-harm. And when you do get an urge, begin to eke out that time and use that time to focus on something else for the meantime. So whether it is an angry run, whether it is just a load of press-ups, as many as you can do within 10 minutes, and start redirecting that distress somewhere else, and you will be able to gain back control of these emotions. So if there is anyone that's relating to that or knows anybody that might need some additional help, then Arthur Ellis is here to help. If anyone wants to speak to us about it, or if they are affected in any way, we monitor our social media, we monitor everything that goes on, and you can self-refer on our website as well to get some support. So feel free to head over there. We've also got a guide on our website which talks you through some aspects of self-harm. So I believe that's within our suicide guide. So if you go onto our website on support guides, you'll be able to find some extra information there as well. So head over to arthurellismhs.com. And thank you very much, Jess. I really appreciate you joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You're so knowledgeable, so great. Thank you. And I'll catch you soon. And for everyone that's listening, thank you very, very much. And like I said, please don't hesitate to reach out to Arthur Ellis Mental Health Support. Thank you very much.
The MK Mental Health Hour and MKFM.